well, what if this could happen? Or what if this could be tried? And that could be a supplier partner. It could be people internal to your company. It could be outside colleagues or groups that you join.
This is Inspiring Women, and today I'm talking to Cheryl Capps. And Cheryl is a many-year senior executive in the area of supply chain. She's not just a senior executive in the area of supply chain. She created modern-day supply chain. We're going to learn about that. Today, Cheryl is a board director, and she's going to talk about her many years of what she's done in supply chain at large-scale global organizations like Corning, like Bristol-Myers Squibb, GE. And Cheryl, thank you for being on Inspiring Women.
Thank you, Lori. It's such an honor. I'm very excited to be here.
Okay, well, we're going to dive right in. I want to talk about what it means to be one of the power players creating modern day supply chain. I mean, you know better than anybody that there's only 11% of the senior executives in supply chain who are women. You helped create the modern discipline of it. But you also, after your many years at most recently Corning, you're now in this new stage of turning into board director and leading a number of companies in that way. So, what does day-to-day look like for you? What are you doing right now?
So right now, I'm actually enjoying myself. I couldn't be happier. I noted that I was moving into retirement probably with 90% excitement and 10% intrepidation, and I should never have given a moment of worry about that 10% in intrepidation. I'm finding that what I believed and had invested in early is that there is room for people who excel in supply chain in the boardroom, not just public companies, but private startup companies, PEs, advisory. And I'm doing what I really loved to do the most, which is I'm able to work with innovators, innovating the next generation of supply chain, spending time with them, their young companies, and their technology that they're de developing. I'm able to advise. I'm an advisor for World 50 and advise chief supply chain officers, and also advise people who are coming to the end of their careers and have aspirations to move into the boardroom. And so I just think how fortunate I am that I was able to really embark what I would call my last phase of my career, probably a decade of board service, a decade of advancing the discipline, and a decade of giving back to the next generation.
Well, maybe you can bring us back, Cheryl, to the, it is a storied career. I am not kidding when I say that you are one of the people who created modern day supply chain through your work. Give us a little bit of the bio sketch of sort of like what you did over the many years that you were working in supply chain.
So if you go back to the beginning, I'm of that vintage where supply chain wasn't even a word when I went to university. It wasn't invented yet. And it was something that resided partially maybe in manufacturing. People thought of it as maybe purchasing and scheduling trucks. And it probably wasn't until the late 1990s, early 2000s that it really emerged as a discipline. And the people who excelled in that area were the people who had broad careers. The supply chain is a function of connection. You're connecting customers to companies, you're connecting companies to their suppliers, you're connecting all the parts of the company. And so what better skill set to the next generation of emerging supply chain leaders were the people who had very broad backgrounds. And I was really gifted. First by GE was on the manufacturing management program, and Bristol-Myers Squibb, who developed me to have a very broad background. I had opportunities from everything from prompts purchasing and supply chain, but manufacturing and finance and R&D. I was a general manager of a private label business. I was involved in the first forays of Lean Six Sigma when GE started, and did business strategy, government relations, and I had just such a very broad background that put me in the right position as supply chain was being embedded.
Did you know that you were creating a new discipline? Was that obvious to you? I mean, sometimes when you're sort of like in the thick of work, you know, and things coming at you, you don't see the forest for the trees. Was that obvious at the time that this was a whole new area? I'm sure you couldn't predict.
I did not predict supply chain. No. What I did feel strongly about was the value of interdisciplinary capability. The idea, and it was very fiercely debated in, you know, in the late 80s into the 90s. Do you develop your leaders with this deep bench expertise, right? Is your CFO, you know, a career finance guy, right?
Yep.
Or is there value in people with very broad backgrounds who have command of really the end-to-end workings of corporations? And I really believe deeply in the latter. I believed that it made me effective in no matter what job I was in. So if I was, for example, in supply chain, but I could speak the language of our research and development, right? Then I could work with my colleagues in that area, help understand what their needs were, help translate that into products that are useful for them.
Yep.
And so that was where I placed my career bet. The bet that speaking other people's languages was really important.
Yeah. Well, Cheryl, you're also really good at it. I mean, you know, there's like this long list of accolades and awards, most powerful, modern day mother, you know, all of these incredible things that support not just the good work that you did, but the important voice that you had in shaping that part of the industry. I want to hone in on, you know, the fact that it is 11% of senior executives in the area of supply chain that are women. So that means by definition that you were one of not just few, but very, very, very few women leaders in that area. Did you notice that? Was that obvious to you? Did that make it even more challenging? You excelled and your career was just on an absolute fast track, you know, despite that. So how did that work for you?
You know, I think when you're living it, and I made a conscious decision early on that there may be disadvantages that I would incur, but there were probably also going to be advantages. And so I never felt badly about taking the advantages, because I felt like I didn't have a say. I didn't have a way to not, you know, to do anything about those disadvantages. And I felt, you know, in my mind, things tend to net out over mm-hmm. time. And so I never really bothered myself. I certainly engaged. I was, you know, the executive sponsor for the Corning Professional Women's Forum, certainly engaged in programs and helping women succeed. But if I think about myself personally, it was not something that I you know, contributed a lot of thought to. Mm-hmm. And sure, I noticed it. When I was a plant manager at GE, I think at the time there were 600 plant managers and two were women.
Wow.
So you go to a meeting and you kind of see it, right?
Yeah.
I remember going to executive meetings where less than 2% of the population were female, and remarking how nice it was during the breaks to get in and out of the bathroom, right? Because there were only two of them, you know, only a couple of us, right? And so yes, you see it, but I just I didn't make it an issue for me. But more or less internalize it on, all right, how do I change things for this generation after me?
Yep. And so, you know, the Corning Women's Professional Group, and what else? Like, how were you able to, you know, bring the awareness and helpfully, you know, change some of those demographic numbers?
So I think first and foremost, you have to lead by example. I have a very strong opinion about, there's a phrase that I usually take great umbrage to that says, hire to availability, right? It says, oh, well, if only 2% of the people, or pick your number, right? 10% of the leaders in the supply chain are women, then if we get 10%, that's our goal, right? To be, and if, go through the simple math, if everybody targets what you're currently at, you actually don't improve. the yep. world as a whole stays flat. The math doesn't yep. work out. And so you have to think to yourself, well, wait a second, I want to, and oh, by the way, people usually fall short of their goals. So
yep.
you are not making the world a better place. So I always push those markers to the side. Whether it was women, people of color, people from different countries, my goal is to get the best seats at the table, and I wanted diversity of thought. And so, yeah. When I left my role, my function was 50% women, right? Mm-hmm. At 50%, and that not it's just the junior levels. That was all the way through the organization. And 2/3 of my leaders were either women or people of color. And so I think it just starts with just leading by example.
Yep.
And you can lead a broader, and people saw the success of the organization, right? And so having these amazing, talented professionals within the organization delivered results. And so, that's a microcosm, because that's, certainly maybe you could see that throughout a company. But then when you share those stories, right, you can inspire others who feel like maybe they don't, they're constrained on how they're thinking about hiring.
Yeah. Right?
So
well, I wanted to, let, maybe let's dive into some of those results, because I mean, some of them include, pulling billions of dollars of, financial resources and higher levels of efficiency and quality, into the supply chain with dollars and out of the supply chain. That's one of the things that you led. You also, during the course of the pandemic, at least as I understand how the story goes, you kept 80 different manufacturing plants up and running and available when most organizations, I mean, like we all know what supply chain is now from the pandemic. Nobody knew about it before, but any layperson is acutely aware because we've experienced the issues mm-hmm. of supply chain, but that is not what you led. You kept things open. Was that, I mean, obviously that's a testament to your leadership. How did your team and the diversity that you brought to your team play into that?
So that's a fantastic question. I tend to think about things in terms of people, process, and technology, like a three-legged stool, and all three have to be strong to be successful. Oftentimes people really focus on, they go for the silver bullet, they go for the technology, but the process isn't robust or they may not have the right talent or the people. I was fortunate in having just a fantastic team. We, prior to the pandemic, many years, we worked on the talent pipeline. 60% of the roles were outside of the US. So we had a constellation of professionals all over the world. And then I had this vision that you could operate the supply chain 24/7 by having the right people in the right places, having the processes that link them, right? The escalation process and the technologies. So giving that specific example about the pandemic, we had invested in AI and machine learning so we could get early signals from the supply chains about disturbances that were likely to happen. Not for mm-hmm. sure that was going to happen. You're predicting it, right? That was tied to a group of people that they would get the alert. It would, the software from learning, right, would kind of would
right.
tell them, this is one is high likelihood. You should look at it. A person would own it. They would set up incident. And the tool was with a company called Elementum, which is a tool for meshing a world together, right?
Yep.
Workflow. And the person would immediately tag people, bring on the global team, and there'd be people all the way around the team. So if somebody was seeing there's a potential shortage in, let's say, Texas, they work on it till they can go to sleep. And guess what? China's waking up, Singapore's waking up, Japan's yep. waking up. They have the incident, they have the material, they have the technology, they start working on the problem. And soon after, India wakes up, right? In comes Budapest, in came Switzerland, back onto the East Coast. Very often that professional that had a problem on their hands, when they went to bed in Texas, would have solution solutions by the time they woke up.
It's so encouraging. I mean, I think that, you know, there are well-storied studies about how diversity in teams in both thought, you know, demographics, age, all of those things lead to better results. And just that planful way that you set forth a vision well ahead of, you know, that crisis pandemic time when it was needed the most. It's just heartening to hear, you know, an example, a very big example of
well,
where
think about it. If anyone, you know, I talked about that stool. If anyone part of that stool failed, we would have failed.
Yeah.
We didn't have this team, this diverse team from all over the world who worked wonderfully and seamlessly together, right, towards common objectives, not selflessly, it would have failed. If I hadn't had the technology that gave me the alert, it gave me the mechanism of collaborating, you know, globally collaborating simultaneously, we would have failed. If I didn't have the fundamental business processes in place on how do you do this? How do you raise an incident? How do you, you know, where do you put the information? How do people find out? What authority do they have to act on this information?
Yeah.
If I didn't have that, it would have failed. And so it's perfect when you talk about, you know, inventing the world, this current world of supply chain. I'm this firm believer that the good leaders have to attack the problem with those three premises.
Well, now many people are designing their systems and their supply chains based on the groundwork that you did, not just leading by example, but literally setting the standards by which people measure the success of their supply chain. You know, Cheryl, I wanted to sort of like just pivot the conversation a little bit. You're now in this like phase next of sort of, you know, this storied career as the senior executive of supply chain, now moving to board service and more real focus, like you just said, on impact. How are you thinking about that? And you, in a conversation you and I had before this, you know, live discussion here, we had talked about how you are really using friends and supporters and almost carrying them with you to help you think about this next phase. I wonder if you could comment on that.
Yeah, I'll go back a few years. You know, a great friend and mentor of mine made a comment and said, look, think about your career in three parts. There's the first part of your career, you're climbing the ladder, right? You're mostly an individual contributor, but maybe low and mid-level a leader. And you're working very, very hard, but you're working very hard to prepare yourself for the next level. So you're achieving things, you're growing, you're learning, but you're positioning yourself. So hopefully you're running something, right? Because that's your second part of the career. And if you're successful, you're running, you know, something very big or impactful or important. And you spend that part of your career running that. And your third part of your career is after your, you know, your official retirement, when you can come back and advise people who are running things. And the comment that they made is, why would you not spend time? You spend all this time in the first part of your career preparing yourself for the second. Yet people abysmally don't spend time in the second part of the career helping, you know, preparing them for the third part. And he was so right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's always this excuse, oh, I don't have time. I'm so focused on my work. But you're making the assumption that those two things are mutually exclusive. They're not. You can contribute to your work. So if you're making advances in supply chain and you can contribute to the greater world in that case, using that example, right? You can document it, you can share it, right? You can become known for that. It gives you a step into the future. So it was really a natural progression. I was fortunate enough to join a public board 3 years before I officially retired, and just really learned in that experience a lot of lessons I could bring back to my company. But, you know, learn the different aspects of being on a public board. And then as I readied myself for retirement itself, it was a natural progression to start working with some of these thought leaders that I've been working with in the industry for a decade.
Yep.
Now had startup companies, or they were, you know, or were advancing their companies, and they had a need for board members who have a broad business background. Again, the first part of my career, very, very broad business background, a really deep bench strength in the area of supply chain and the associated systems and tools. And then, again, the relationship and understanding what it is they do and what the need is in the market. So those three pieces just come together so nicely.
I also just love sort of the compartmentalization that you have on some of these different important stages of a career journey and being thoughtful. I mean, the obvious one, like you just said, of like the beginning, trying to get to the senior levels, like most people think about that who are aspiring to leadership, but then thinking about the like senior levels and then moving to, you know, a different impactful advisory thing. That's just wonderful. Let's just close out, Cheryl. I mean, I could talk about a lot of things with you, but the thing I usually ask women, you know, powerful women like you, about what advice would you give in the early stage. I wanted to hone it a little bit. What you did, what you have accomplished in creating the field of supply chain, so many people are in this new area of technology, and we don't know where AI is going, but we know it's moving very, very fast. And it just seems like there are new areas being formed. So for the women who are in those early stages today, in areas that are changing rapidly, what advice do you give to them as they too are in the places of forming new disciplines, et cetera?
Yeah, I think the advice I'd give is just don't be afraid to try things. You know, innovation isn't about, you know, it's not about your batting average, right? Like, oh, I tried one thing and I got one thing, right? It's more on, I hate using sports analogies, but I will, but it is around like the shots on goal. If you're not taking a lot of shots on goal, nothing's going to go in. And so I think about it that don't be afraid to make those mistakes, because that's how you learn. The greatest innovators, the greatest leaders probably made more mistakes than everybody else in their companies combined. Mm-hmm. And I certainly did that with my team. And I would say that pretty frequently. I probably make more mistakes in one day than all of you together, right? But if you don't keep trying things, if you don't keep imagining, you know, well, what if? If you don't surround yourself with people that think like that, you certainly need to surround yourself with a lot of people who can execute. But nothing, you know, nothing replaces good execution and good strategy and execution. But you also have to have a cadre of people around here who can think about the what if. Well, what if this could happen? Or what if this could be tried? And that could be a supplier partner. It could be people internal to your company. It could be outside colleagues or groups that you join. If you don't wake up every day and think about like how something could be better and how you could change it, you simply aren't going to get there.
Yeah, well, that is sort of like the definition of the innovator's mindset, and such fantastic advice. I've been speaking with Cheryl Capps on this Inspiring Women episode. And Cheryl, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been an episode of Inspiring Women with Lori McGraw. Please subscribe, rate, and review. We are produced by Kate Cruz at Executive Podcast Solutions. More episodes can be found on inspiringwomen.show. I am Lori McGraw, and thank you for listening.